All right, it's another Wednesday night, and you are in the zone here on Newstalk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Dave and Glass with you again on another Wednesday night. We are, as always, taking your phone calls at 333-2665. Been quiet most of the week on our two major college teams, the IU football and basketball teams, but the Indiana Pacers are in the playoffs against the Raptors, now tied up 1-1 after two games up in Toronto. The entire country of Canada holding on with bated breath as the Raptors trying to win any games that they possibly could up at home and in this series, as they've have such futility in the playoffs up there in Toronto. But 98-87, they were the victors over the Pacers. Pacers got down again in the second quarter, and this time were not able to come back like they did in the first quarter. A little tougher night for Paul George, but in particular a lot tougher night for a lot of the other players on the team, as the Raptors did what they needed to do, tying up the series. The Pacers still hold this elusive, whatever you want to call it, intangible home court advantage until they lose at home. I don't know if that matters much, because you still got to play and win four games to win the series. But Glass, not all that unexpected. Game two, Pacers go down to the Raptors. The Raptors had to win this game. They could not come back to Indiana without having to win a game if they have any hope at this series. And they've got a ton of pressure on them, but they played awfully well at home.
They did. They played well, and the Pacers, well, they didn't. And they dug themselves another hole, not as deep as they, or actually deeper than what they dug themselves in game one. And when you have to play the entire game trying to climb that mountain to come back and get to the top of it and get over it, they never did. Would they get it to four a couple of times? Yep. There in the third quarter, and just couldn't put together a couple defensive stops in a row to get it. Now, they were down 18, so let's give them full marks for not packing it in and saying the night's over with. Right, in the NBA, it's forever. Then there's plenty of mood swings and momentum swings and everything else in between. But you saw the weakness of the Pacers for me in game two that we talked about on Monday night. It can't be Paul George and one other guy. Yeah. It just can't be. There's not enough time. There's not. Now, you've got to remember two things. George is going to get you 25. It's an off night when
that's
he doesn't.
Yeah.
So he's going to do that. So when he gets you 28, that's a good night. Great night. Yeah, we're getting close to that. But the problem with George is, and this is why game one was, he was lauded for it, and he should be, he's checking DeRozan the whole night.
Yeah, right.
He's busting it on both ends.
And he can, but it's hard every night.
He has to have some possessions off offensively.
Yeah.
To that, because he can't dog it on defense guarding their best offensive player.
And they brought in a lot of guys that can fill up the basket, or at least have in the past, and they haven't yet.
That has been the problem. I told you, I'd bet you $5 that C.J. Miles wouldn't have a night like he did, and tied it. 2 for 7.
Yep.
Exactly the same thing. So you don't get any help there. George Hill gets paid a ton of money and scores 4 points.
Yeah.
That you can't. Those aren't winning plays to beat a 56-win team who is desperate, who is on their home court, who is playing a night game, which they're obviously more comfortable with.
And
you can't have guys no-show it in big games.
And Monte Ellis scored 15 points.
15
he's
shots.
He's been in double figures both times. 12 shots, 15
still
points. I think the point with Monte Ellis here is Monte Ellis used to be a 20-point-a-night guy and take up 20 shots a night, and he's had to, and correctly so, he's got a lot of other guys that can score on the Pacers, but that means they got to do it. You know, if he's going to kind of subjugate himself a little bit and not take as many shots, 12 shots, some of these other guys have got to step up. Miles Turner and Solomon Hill, we're not talking about them in this game, even though they got 43 combined minutes. They had a very good game one.
They didn't have a very good game two, and that was the issue. But the key for the Pacers is you have to find possessions for George offensively where he doesn't have to have the ball for 17 and 18 seconds, and then you don't knock down the open jumper. It's one thing when it works, but it's even worse when it doesn't, because you know he's going to the other end. You know DeRozan's going to run him off screens. He is not a catch and shoot guy. So that means he's going to catch it, and he's going to put moves on. He's going to have to guard. He's going to have to get his body in the way. You've seen him take charges in the series where he beats him.
And DeRozan won 5 of 18. So, I mean, the defense was decent.
It's working.
Yeah.
The problem in this series has not been DeRozan and Kyle Lowry. That has not been the problem.
That's correct.
The problem, the backcourt were the 9 for 31. That was terrible.
9 of 31, 0 of 7 on threes.
That's exactly what that is the recipe for success. But what the Raptors did that the Pacers didn't do, they got another big night from Joseph.
Yep.
They got another big night from Valanciunas, or however you say his name, Valanciunas. They started him early. We talked about that on Monday. We said, what are they going to do? Are they going to get Turner involved in the game? They're going to go right at him. Are they going to try to establish it inside again? And boom, what do you have at halftime? A lot of them.
Yeah.
I think he had 13 in the first quarter. He had another big rebound night, only 15.
23 and 15 is what were his
numbers. I think he had 13 or so in the first quarter. But it was a big quarter. Everything went through him to start with. And when he gets going, then you can bring DeRozan and Lowry into the game.
Mm-hmm.
They're not worried about being down 18-6, and those guys have to start jacking it up. They did exactly what they wanted to do, and the Pacers defensively couldn't get them out of anything they wanted to do until they got down 18, and they started putting together some stops. They started knocking down some shots, but they didn't get a spark off the bench anywhere. They didn't get any other support. Monte Ellis had a fair game. I mean, 15 points, that's a fair night for
him. It's not his peak of his career, but he's not
9 of 11 for 24 points.
If you're talking about 15 points out of the guy right now, again, on 50% shooting, I think you got five rebounds. I think you're getting what you want.
In a vacuum, that's great, but that's not enough.
They needed more than that last night.
When he is the only one,
yes,
then he needs 24. If he's the only other one.
No, you pointed out. I mean, 4 points out of George Hill. You've got to have better nights out of guys like C.J. Miles and Rodney Stuckey. They're there to score.
And they're not, and that's the problem. This was Solomon Hill's second playoff game, third playoff game, so let's not worry about what he's
doing
or not
doing. Same with Miles Turner. They're both going to be up and down a bit.
And what happened to Turner? He gets in foul trouble. Mm-hmm. Why? Because Valanciunas saw something on tape, and he went right through him all night long and made Turner uncomfortable. And we talked about on Monday, too, not to point out of these are facts. These are adjustments that you thought were going to be made if you're a good Toronto team.
Mm-hmm.
These were things that were going to come out and say, well, let's try this. Let's try to get them off balance here. Let's not let them get comfortable. And if George goes crazy, fine. Let's make sure nobody else trails them in that 25-28 point range where then a couple 8-6 and 10 point performances mean something. Doesn't mean anything when you only have one other guy in double figures.
Toronto was 4 of 19 on threes in the first game. They were 5 of 18 in this game.
Keep shooting,
very
boys.
Similar. The difference here is that the Pacers are 4 of 20 on threes last night.
Awful.
And they were 11 of 21 the night before. That's a pretty big difference. It didn't cause as many turnovers. So they just didn't make Toronto as uncomfortable. They're up in their scorer's grill, and that's great. Making them, you know, making their shots hard. But again, if you're going to let Valanciunas beat you, and he does, that's, I think, the other disappointing part here for the Pacers is not really much contribution in the front court.
Nope, and they went big to start again, and still he tore through them. No problem on that. Now the Pacers have injury concerns. Jan Mahimi limped off in the second half with some back issues. He did not return to the game. He is questionable for tomorrow night, 7:30.
Turner landed on his hip, too.
Right. He ran back in, so that was the encouraging part of that. But the problem with the Pacers is the front court, if it's thin, okay. Mm-hmm. You've got to provide something, whether it's rebounding, whether it's just getting in the way. And then, again, the wing players have to provide something besides voluminous shot attempts.
Yeah, exactly.
It has to be something else. They have to get on the glass.
Like it actually going in.
They have to, again, shut down their opponent. They've got to do something different. But the good news is it's the first playoff game for the Pacers at home in 2 years. It's sold out. The place will be jumping tomorrow night. And you hope they find their shooting boots in their home arena like most teams do.
Got to take a quick break. 333-2665 is our phone number. Dave and Glass with you in the zone. All right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. 333-2665 is the phone number. Reds had a day game today, but
that's a winner.
Come home for the weekend and a early four-game series of much importance, as much as you can in April. Cubs coming to town, best record in Major League Baseball.
The Rockies had the best record in the West, I believe. Reds take 2 out of 3. It's their third walk-off win of the year. Tucker Barnhart, the hero, the catcher from Brownsburg. Local kid doing well.
Nice.
And they only had 5 walk-off wins all of last year, Dave, so the Reds move a game above 500. 8-7. They are now alone in second place until, well, I don't know, the Cubs beat the Cardinals today? I think they were up in that game.
The Cardinals are winning, and it's delayed.
Ooh, that means it's coming this way with a 90% 100% chance of rain tonight and a 90% chance of rain tomorrow. That makes sense. So the Reds were 7-7 entering
delayed
today.
In the seventh inning, it appears.
Score?
4-1 Cardinals.
Cardinals. All right, so they're looking to avoid the sweep and join the Reds in second place. Cubbies with the best record in baseball to the Great American Ballpark tomorrow. And we'll have Thursday, Friday, Saturday, all 7 p.m. starts. That's easy to remember. Reds win the first series of this homestand. Great. Get a split with the Cubs. I don't think anybody's going to complain about that because the Reds go on the road next week. They're in Yankee Stadium Monday through Wednesday. Then it's in Pittsburgh for the weekend there. So, again, shouldn't be easy. And the season's getting started off on a pretty good foot. Get those starting pitchers into the seventh inning so that bullpen's not dead by Memorial Day. You can see the whole Reds broadcast schedule at WGCLradio.com. While we're jumping, don't forget Sunday, soccer fans, Indiana University hosting the Mexican Youth National Team in an international friendly, 2 p.m. Go to IUHoosiers.com for all your ticketing information. Todd Yeagley will join me Friday morning at 8:20. Give us a preview. Spring has been good to the Hoosiers. They've been knocking home some goals, playing pretty well. So we'll get a spring update and then a preview of the, I believe, the under-20 team. But they're always good. Yeah, these are pro kids. Yeah. These are pros. These aren't college kids. Same age, but they're not. They are professionals.
The under-20 team has handled the Hoosiers a couple times. Yes. The under-18 team, I know the Hoosiers have done pretty well.
The younger groups, good Indiana talent, no has. Question. But the these kids getting ready for, again, the reason they play these games, they play Notre Dame, they play us, is because they're getting ready for a big tournament. And they want decent competition. They want somebody that hasn't seen them all the time. Right. And these would essentially be, if the San Antonio Spurs had a B team, these would be the guys on their B team. Yeah. If that transcends sport and people can understand that a little bit better. These aren't college kids looking to get to where they're there. They're playing for their country.
Exactly right. They're real close.
And it's an exciting time, and it's great pageantry, and 81 and sunshine and a 0% chance.
Some of the names. I know you know some of the names that have played the Mexico team before. I
mean, Javier Hernandez, Chicharito. Giovanni Dos Santos has played for them. Yeah. Guardado, I believe, played on one of those teams. Hernandez.
These are all World Cup, high-quality players.
So. I want to say Carlos Salcido back in the day. It's just, these kids are the next step from the full Mexican national team. The 21s and the 20s are the next. The U23s is more the Olympic kind of fringe players, but these are the guys that are sniffing the Copa America and sniffing the World Cup qualifier. So it's great pageantry. It's great fun.
It'd be your straight to the NBA guys back in the day. Pretty much. Your LeBron James types. Yep. Maybe not quite that level,
when you see the
under
17s or the 18s, those are the kids that are more on the developmental, still on that swing up. These guys are the ones who have made it through.
Yep, exactly right.
So it's exciting times. IUHoosiers.com. Chuck Crabb will have more info on that Friday morning as well. He joins us at 7. 2 o'clock Sunday.
2 o'clock
81
Sunday.
In sunshine. Beautiful. Walk up is fine. Yep. It's not. You don't have to worry about a sellout. There'll be a lot of people there, but it's not. Yep. They have the little five stands still.
Oh,
up
a lot of people then.
Because they do that for the overflow. And it's a pretty smart idea because I think they get about 68 in there without the additional ones. So they leave them in there, and we've had some great crowds.
Nice crowd,
and weather's going to help that as well. And that's the final game for the Hoosier spring season. So Todd will get us caught up on all that on Friday morning.
Very nice. 333-2665 is the phone number. Talking NBA basketball, the NBA playoffs underway. Pretty much everyone's got two games in at this point. The Pacers tied 1-1 against Toronto, getting the split. Up there on the road against the 2-seed Raptors, played a much better game one, of course, than game two, and got better contributions across the board. But the question is, I mean, they've done a pretty good job on the two leading scorers for the Raptors.
Yeah.
These are both guys that score over 20 points a night.
And, that's why Paul George wasn't happy.
They've made it hard, but up front, in the front court, that's where they're getting their brains beat in a little
bit. Well, the Raptors have shown the Pacers the way. If your main guys aren't firing, in the case of the Pacers, it's George and nobody else.
Right.
You have to find
somebody else.
You have to draw it up for somebody else. You have to focus on somebody else. George can get his own shot, and he does it quite easily and quite well.
He had 28.
It was great.
8 of 15 shooting.
That's fantastic.
11 free throw attempts.
There you go. And the Pacers, I believe, had more free throw attempts in the game in Toronto. That was another area.
25 of 30. Both teams very good. 23 of 25 for Toronto,
Still, plus five attempts. They're trying to keep Toronto off the line.
They've been getting beat. I mean, they're beat 25 right now, minus 25 on the
rebounding.
Boards.
That's the key. So Toronto is finding something when plan A isn't working. Now the Pacers will have to do that 7:30 tomorrow night. Usually home teams play better. Obviously the crowd's going to be geeked up and ready to go because they missed the taste of this. Remember, the Pacers have made the playoffs almost, you can count on about four fingers since 1990 how many times they haven't. So you get back to familiar surroundings. You get back to a place where you see the ball go in the basket a lot. But at some point, you got to tighten up your rotation and find guys that can do it. I understand when you're down 18, you're going to throw something out there and hope it sticks. Mm-hmm. Pacers make a 15-2 run, get right back in it, which was fantastic. So the guts, the determination isn't the bad thing. It's the execution and it's the finishing that they need to do. And, Dave, we talk about rebounding. You don't think there's one guy on Toronto's team that just jumps higher than everybody, right?
Right.
Or is taller than everybody. Might be. Valsis is.
Yeah.
I mean, be a little bit taller.
He's got 34 rebounds in two games.
But everybody's got a rebound. Everybody's mm-hmm. going to get to the glass. Or you have to continue to hope that he doesn't continue to perform this way. He gave you plenty in game one with 19 of them and added 15 in game two. So I think the cat's out of the bag there. So if you're the Pacers, you got to get evened up on the glass a little bit more. You've got to continue to keep Toronto off the line. That's easy free points. And then the Pacers have to shoot the basketball better, get himself in better shots. You saw a little bit in game two. Game opens up a little bit. Transition gets sloppy. Start turning the ball over. That's how that lead blew up a little bit. And Toronto started making some shots, and that's going to happen. They didn't win 56 games getting lucky. They're a good basketball team. But I think the Pacers at home, knowing they've got home court advantage, can send a great message tomorrow night, taking a 2-1 series lead, and then Toronto's got to win three of the last four. That's just how that works out.
And Frank Vogel, I mean, again, he's, you know, people have been hot and cold on Frank Vogel over the years. Here's a great chance for him to show what he can do. It's
exactly
all about
adjustments
in these seven-game series. It really is. And, you know, the Raptors got one up on him now. And you know, I don't know where you go in the front court if you're Frank Vogel, because frankly it looks a lot like
Mahimi's back is hurting, that's not going to help anything
either. But I mean, it looks a lot like you're kind of at the whim and the way the wind blows with Miles Turner. I mean, this is a guy who's a first round draft pick. He could be all pro eventually here, or he could disappear a little bit like he did the other night. Which are you going to get?
Again,
in the NBA playoffs, you can't rely on which are you going to get.
Okay, here's your adjustment. You start running doubles at him.
Yeah.
You're going to have to do something, because Turner playing him one-on-one, if he gets in foul trouble, like you saw,
exactly right.
He had five fouls, he had four the other
night.
Mahimi
can't play, and Miles Turner's your only big in there.
Jordan Hell looks like he's on a different planet. I don't know what planet that is, but he's going to have to give those couple minutes here and there, especially if Jan can't go. He's going to have to give you some minutes in that sense. But where did the Pacers double from? What do they do to get the ball? Get Valanciunas away from the basket. And again, it's not as simple as just blocking out. There are things you have to do to take the ball away from his side of the court. And the Pacers are known for not scoring 110 points. They're known for adjusting defensively. I would think that would happen. You got to give them full marks for what they've done in the backcourt. That's encouraging.
Absolutely.
Because you could be down 2-0.
Defensively.
That's what I'm talking about, defensively, right. You could be down 2-0, and those two could be averaging 48 a game.
Absolutely.
That's not been the case. That has to be the, okay, see, we've got this part, now we have to adjust to that part. And how to get the Pacers scoring more? Well, Toronto likes to defend as well. The stat was at the end of that game, what was the final, 98-87?
Yep.
Something about under 90 points. Toronto's 32-3 or something ridiculous. They like to grind you down a little bit. So if it gets into a possession-to-possession game like we saw in game one, that's a huge advantage for the Pacers, because George is the best player on the court.
That's right.
That's it.
He'll always get his own shot.
And he showed you the second half in that game, in game number one, that he can get you from anywhere, and he's efficient. He doesn't take a lot of bad ones, and that's the good news. And plus, he gets the fouling.
You brought guys like C.J. Miles and Rodney Stuckey in.
You brought
Ty Lawson in, not to score necessarily, but to be a facilitator. How do you get at least Stuckey and Miles going? Because, again, these guys are here to score.
The good news about Stuckey is once he makes one, he's going to make five or six. You just got to get him off to a good start. So you got to run something for him. Get him in a pick and roll where he can turn the corner, where he can pull up things. What's his advantage? What does he do best? Vogel knows what that is. You're going to see more of that being ran. You need to run some stuff as well to get Big Val out of the lane.
Right, exactly.
You got to drag him out and run pick and pop with Turner, or do anything. So when that shot goes, you maybe got a shot at an offensive rebound because that big galoot's not clogging up the lane down there. I mean, 34 rebounds in two games. That's awesome.
That's great.
And that wasn't 1-24 and a 10.
19-15.
That's pretty good.
That's really good.
So you got to get him away from the basket, get him out of his comfort zone, and push him off the lane defensively. Can Turner do that? Well, he's going to have to. Or they're going to have to hawk the ball to the other side of the floor and not let him get involved.
Well, and let's be fair about it too. This is where the, you know, the weakness of the offseason for the Pacers comes into play. Their front court is just, it's depleted. It's got the first round draft pick, and you knew he, as a 19-year-old, he was going to struggle and he was going to be on and off. So I mean, you certainly can't put it on all on Miles Turner.
No.
But remember, this team, you know, in the last
wanted
2 years had
small.
David West and Roy Hibbert up there, and these guys were at one point in time, they were all-stars. So that's kind of the changeover in the Pacers right now, and you know, it might be young and up and coming,
right?
But it's still not right now.
The question you have to ask defensively is, do you give a little to Lowry and D. Rosen to hit jumpers to sag and help?
Right.
Because Big Val's getting easier ones, getting the bunnies. Do you want to let those guys get
see
hot?
Val can keep doing it.
Before you run out of gas? You know my thing. Usually the good players are going to find their shots regardless, and it's not from a lack of volume
from
those guys. So they're not hitting. Is it going to change out of their building? Yeah, because they're good. It's not going to. You might get three bad games out of them. You're not going to get five or six.
They've put up 63 shots.
And they're going to put up
on. they're going to
put
going.
Up 60 more in the next two at Bankers Life Fieldhouse. Yeah. But again, do you want the guys scoring from close range? Do you want the guys trying to knock down 18 footers off the dribble? I know which one I'd rather prefer, but the tough part about the Pacers is two things. They're thin in the front court. I think that's excellent as well. The other thing is, it can't be left to the fourth quarter, because if you don't get there, there isn't any.
Right.
It sounds so simplistic, but it's true.
No, the second quarters have not been good.
You can't dig these holes. Maybe a little bit at home, because you know the crowd's going to bring you out of it. You're going to make those runs. But getting to the fourth quarter and being down 11 and 13, 15,
right.
Paul George isn't as effective.
Yeah.
Paul George misses two shots in a row. They score twice in a row. Boom, it's 19. It's not hard to figure out. What the Pacers have to do is – defensively, got to get limit second chances, force these guys into tougher shots, clean up the glass, and they have to be efficient. They have to get to the foul line, they have to score, because when they're not scoring, that takes them out of their comfort zone, and what happens? Big leads blow up on them, and if the Pacers aren't in the game late, Dave, we've seen them blow plenty of late games. I still like their chances because, number one, the pressure on Toronto is greater than it is on the Pacers, and the Pacers have the best player on the floor.
Get his own shot.
Not even close.
And to be clear, the Pacers have actually, they're down minus 15 in the first quarter, so it's late in that first quarter they start getting down.
And guess what?
They make a comeback late in the second, but it's still, the damage is done at that point.
You're the math guy. Who's playing the second half of the first quarter?
Yeah, exactly.
In the beginning of the second quarter.
The guys who aren't scoring.
The guys who aren't giving you anything off the bench. There's no spark. There's no nothing there, and there has to be something before there is nothing. It sounds very existential, but it's true. You can't dig those starters the hole. And, again, they made a nice run 15-2. I'll give them credit there. But this has been multiple games, and the box score doesn't lie in that. When you're 2-for-7, 1-for-whatever it is, mm-hmm. Give me a guy that scored more than 8 points besides Miles Turner.
Yeah, I don't have one.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
The Pacers aren't going to win those games unless George just goes
13 for Miles and Stuckey combined.
If George goes ape and gets you 40-something,
yeah,
you got a chance. Yeah. But Pacers want limited possessions. I don't think they want to get in the 130s. Shoot it better at home, boys. Knock down some threes. Take that pressure off your leading scorer. Let him shut down D. Rosen, and he'll carry you home. You just got to be close to home when that fourth quarter bell rings.
Got to take a quick break. 333-2665 is our phone number. Dave and Glass with you in the zone. All right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. We'll talk a little NFL draft here in a little while. The top two picks in the NFL draft have already been traded.
It's not even draft week.
That's next week.
That's next week.
We'll talk a little bit about that in the Colts here in just a little while. But first, 333-2665 is our phone number. Let's bring in our friend John.
Hello, John.
How you doing, John?
Hey, guys. What's going on? I got a question with the Pacers for you going forward. I'm just interested to know what either one of you think. Which is a greater need for them when they get to the draft in June? A point guard, which I've been yelling for years, or another big, because they're obviously shorthanded. No matter how small they want to go, they simply don't have enough bigs. Which do you think is a bigger need for them? Where would you go if you were the one making the pick?
Yes, you're exactly right. I don't think they can get it wrong because they need help at all those positions. Mahimi has developed nicely here in the last month or so. He's been playing with great confidence, but he's got this nagging back problem he's dragging along. And back problems just you that doesn't help anything moving forward.
Well, you just don't have a lot of big guys right now to help out Paul George. You tried him at the four for a while. Exactly. Now he's at the three. I'd like to see some beef up there. You're getting good contribution late in the season from Solomon Hill, but he strikes you as that guy off the bench that gives you the energy, and he's doing great
and
with
he'll do
that.
Do it every other game, sure. Yeah. And again, he has
LaVoy Allen, and you know, is not doing it for you. Jordan Hill certainly isn't.
You've got great backups in that. Is the NBA going to the game that the Pacers want to play, though, this wide open style, or do you need to find a 7'2" guy from Turkey like Oklahoma City has and like Dallas has and like Bogut in Golden State? Everybody's got a big guy. I don't think you can completely eliminate that, because that is, you're seeing in this series, without having one, it's a problem. I don't think you can completely abandon that style and go 4.5 guards or whatever it is. And if you do, you have to make every shot. There's no in-between on that. The other problem the Pacers have is that George Hill position. What position is it?
Yeah.
He gives you some really good stuff. He gives you some stuff that you wonder, hey, where is it? Where is it happening? But bringing in a kid where the Pacers are going to pick, John, that's the other problem to this. Mm-hmm. They're not going to get an impact player at 17 or 18.
No.
So you're either going to have to move, which we haven't seen Bird do, if I'm right. I've never seen him move up in the draft, has he? Am I off base here?
No.
Not really.
I don't
think
he has. I mean, he likes that. No. He loves picking there because he likes to, you know, to find that Roy Hibbert or find that guy a little bit later. But but what are you getting at 17 or 18? You're going to have to really out-scout somebody. You're going to have to probably take a flyer on somebody in the character department who's dropped. So you get into that world. In the NBA, who gets helped? The guys that get guys in free agency or the guys who stink and get a premium player to get you back on your feet? So where do you go? You're not drafting Russell Westbrook.
Right.
You're not drafting Durant. You're not getting one of those guys. I think it's a great question. So I think Ryan Grigson has the same issue with the Colts. Do you draft talent or do you draft need? And I'm in the talent boat.
Well,
you've got to draft talent at the NBA level, because if you're pigeonholed into one position in the NBA, you better be Shaquille O'Neal.
Right.
Or you better be Chris Paul.
Well,
that's it. Everybody else has got to play multiple positions, play multiple styles.
You could consider an entire overhaul of this lineup in general also, and just say, hey, let's look at George Hill and Paul George as your backcourt. Look at guys like Monte Ellis is coming off the bench.
He's got
and giving
two
you
more
that spark.
Years, though. Yeah.
Well, but not getting rid of him.
$12 million
but
bucks on
if
your
he's
bench
if he's
tough,
coming
though.
Off the bench, well, he's still playing 25, 30 minutes a game. There's one other decision that nobody talks about that Bird has been very.
Let's get rid of Paul George.
Well, no, Larry Bird has talked about this, and we talked about it a little bit on Monday. Is it time for a new coach? They've made a lot of moves in a lot of different directions. That's a legitimate question. I don't know that Frank Vogel's the problem. But again, what, year five, year six?
Year
and
six.
Bird is on the record saying 4 or 5 years and they tune you out?
John, I think the issue is, in a perfect world, you would draft a guy that would play C.J. Miles' position and get 6 years younger and a guy that can fill it up. Because I think the Pacers have enough gritty players around there. I don't know how long Stuckey's going to last. The Pacers have plenty of holes, and there's a reason they're the seventh seed. We're not talking about we're not talking about a step away team here from an Eastern Conference Finals. We're talking about either get real bad or get real lucky in the draft, and that's a terrible place to be.
Well, I'll tell you, the Sixers have been real bad, and it hasn't helped them because they've been drafting crazy for like 3 or 4 years.
They want to keep drafting guys that are injured is stupid.
Yeah.
There's a difference between drafting crazy and drafting stupid. Hey,
yeah, what makes you think that we're always going to draft really smart? Turner was a great pick.
Paul George
was a great pick.
Solomon Hill was a lousy pick, and he's having a
guys that weren't great picks.
Solomon Hill is a lousy pick. He's having a great late in the season. I mean,
maybe
somebody like that turns
into right.
your tough guy. I don't
know. Now, the Pacers can take their time on Solomon Hill because he doesn't make any money.
Right.
That's
exactly.
The great part about that. But, you know, Rakeem Christmas and Shane Whittington and all these other guys, either get them off the books and find somebody to play because you have two guys that are sitting playing in the Fort Wayne games that are, what, both 6'11"? And they can't get him on the roster playing a 7'2" guy or however big Val is for Toronto. So again, you have these guys. Whittington's been there forever. It seems like at least 3 years. They keep re-signing him to these 1 year deals. He keeps getting hurt. Christmas, big kid, played in the ACC with Syracuse. What are you waiting for? You got to change your roster next round. Okay, well if that's the problem,
well, it
that's
took
the
him
problem.
3 years to be anything at Syracuse. Too.
That's again. You have these pieces in there. Is it the piece problem? What the Pacers have to do? They decided to go into the small up tempo lineup, But they got too many guys that missed too many shots on too many similar nights.
There's two or three guys on this team right now who are disappointing you extremely that in the offseason we expected to play at least reasonable, if not significant, roles. And that's Rodney Stuckey, C.J. Miles, and I'll say it, Jordan Hill. Jordan Hill was going to be your backup center type of guy. He was going to give you 15 to 20 minutes. He played three. He played with the last group. It was him and Joe Young and Glenn Robinson Jr.
Yep.
You know, that can't be the case, is those three guys. You know, if you're going to make those kind of moves and bring them into veterans to significant roles for you, they can't not contribute.
And you just made the point, John, and here's where it is. You draft Joe Young, you bring in Glenn Robinson, the guys can't crack the starting lineup, they mm-hmm. can't beat out Stuckey, and they can't beat out C.J. Miles.
Yeah.
Okay, I get it. Miles makes $7, $8 million a year. George Hill makes $8 million a year. Stuckey's, what, got five in his deal? He got a nice contract.
Yeah,
$315 million, I think it was. But when that's what you're stuck with, and no pun intended, those aren't the answers. So the Pacers, you got to go get a score, it sounds like, because when Paul George is left on – when the Pacers play really well, everybody scores.
Yeah.
Now, how often does that happen? Well, there are seven seats, so that tells you everything you need to know, in my opinion. So to answer your question in a roundabout long way, you get the best player available, and the good news is, and the bad news is, you can because you have so many holes. And that's a tough part right now. Mm-hmm. And if Larry Bird, heaven forbid, would ever make a move to get up. Didn't remember we heard about the Ricky Rubio earlier in the wintertime?
Yeah.
Get what was George Hill going?
Yeah.
If that's been floated, that means that's being looked at. And at least I like that. But the two things that Pacers never do, they never move on the draft, it seems like. Yeah. And all the guys they bring in the second half of the season, they never get better. I don't know if they don't want to mess with the chemistry. I don't know if they don't want to have the money to take it on. But what I do know is if they don't make the playoffs with Paul George and he is rotting in his prime years here, they're not going to get tickets at the door.
No, exactly. It's a waste of Paul George.
The worst thing you want to do in the NBA is figure out 2 years too late. You should have blown it up 2 years ago.
Right.
That is the worst thing you can do.
I don't see trading Paul George because Miles Turner, I think if he gets stronger, he's going to be a great player, not a good player.
Yes.
I think he was one of the Towns and maybe one other guy, he was probably the third best player in that draft. I think he's going to be tremendous if he gets stronger. He's
in 2 years,
this roster isn't horrible, but you brought in two veterans to score who aren't scoring right now. And that's the way it is.
And those guys are a dime a dozen, to be honest with you. You can find those guys in the league. The career journeyman 14-point-a-game scorer. They make a lot of money.
We turned Monte Ellis from an 18-point guy to a 12-point guy.
And that's exactly right.
That might be half the problem.
But George doesn't – I know Monte Ellis signed a 3-year deal, so this is year one. He has 2 years left. Exactly. Does George Hill just have 2 years left as well?
I'd have to look.
So you're going
to
have a
– I don't know.
You're going to get some kind of turnover here quickly.
Yes, you are.
And that's the good news because the foundation pieces of Turner and – Turner reminds me of LaMarcus Aldridge. Is that fair?
Yep.
Big, long,
obviously very early, but...
But he's the same kind of player. His skill set
he can shoot 18 footers like rain.
He is the real deal.
And he'll grow into that, which is good for the Pacers.
He looks like a natural scorer. I mean, he does.
You think he's a center or a forward?
He's a four.
He's forward, yeah.
He's a natural four because he can step out and shoot it. He can run.
He's good, right? He's gotten really good with his hands on defense to the point where he's not a liability over there anymore. He's blocking shots. I'm not sure he's... He's a little bit of a rim protector. I don't think there's any question there. I don't see him as the huge inside guy.
Well, if Mahimi gets better, they need to get one guy that inside that can play that's decent, and they definitely need to get a guy who's at least one guy, a point guard, and somebody that can actually make shots consistently.
Yeah,
Monte Ellis has three more years at over $10 million a year. Yes, he did. Rodney Stuckey has two more years at $7 million a year. C.J. Miles has two more years at $4.5 million a year.
What's George Hill?
George Hill has one more year at $8 million.
Okay, so.
And George has always been the good player, nice guy, should always be coming off your bench as your leader of your second group.
He's a rotation guy.
He should not be your point
guard. He's miscast.
He's always been that.
That's great. But the Pacers have plenty of holes to fill. They will have veteran presence with that roster you've mentioned, so they can nurture some guys along. You just hope Solomon Hill breaks out and gets it. You hope a guy like, I don't know, Christmas or – you keep signing these guys.
Christmas and Young both have three more years, but they're
Young's a rookie. Contract.
Yeah,
that's
Solomon
Hill's
deal is up, it appears.
You would love to find a complimentary wing scorer, I think, to go with George to wear out the other team.
Yeah.
You're not going to find, I don't know how many centers are out there anymore. John, you watch more basketball than I do. The college game, how many true...
It's not a relevant position, but it's not the position that we used to be.
You know what? And I'm going to be a xenophobe here, but it's a foreign position. All the big guys...
And they like to shoot.
And all the big guys that come over here are skilled, but they're not afraid to bang either. You watch these other guys, they're in there banging, getting after it.
No, the only
and the
guy,
American game, the AAU game, is to shoot the three game and run up and down
the court. That's the real center for the Pacers roster right now is Rakeem Christmas. I mean, he's the only natural, you know, kind of put both feet in the lane kind of guy.
And can't get on the court.
Well, a big guy, say, I don't think he's in the draft right now. Nigel Hayes, did he declare for the draft or
is
he coming back?
He is no agent, so he is going to take a look and do what Troy Williams is going to do.
Diamond Stone the same way?
And Diamond Stone, I think, did hire, but I'd have to double check on that.
I would be stunned if he ever came back to school after.
Yeah, I thought he hired.
You know, another big would help him a lot, but I've always been screaming for a point guard that can shoot, that can actually score.
That's why that Rubio trade made a little sense.
And Paul George is 25 years old. So, I mean, going young, real young with this team is still, to me, a great idea. Now, you don't want to miss the playoffs, but...
You can't miss the playoffs because the Simon family will not give any more money if they're not making the playoffs. That is this model has been working for them. It is putting money in their pocket, and they are not... they might be, quote-unquote, losing some on the surface, but they're not going to break the bank for Durant. The free agent market, Monte Ellis is in the world Indiana's in play for, but that's got to be a interesting look-see if somebody's got an agent who's paying attention saying, hey, Turner's 20, George's 25,
yeah,
you want to get in with there, they're going to have a couple bucks to throw around. That's going to be the interesting part. But what Larry Burden has to find is not another guy that you got to wait 2 or 3 years for because those time are slipping away.
Yep.
Good job, buddy.
John, thanks for the phone call. We appreciate it. We got to hit a break.
John's always paying attention. That's
absolutely.
Good news there, and that's hardly surprising either. But, yeah, you want the Pacers to have balance, and most good teams do. Look at Golden State. Boy, the Pacers could add Draymond Green. A lot of teams are saying that.
Pacers could add Kawhi Leonard. I mean,
yep.
They play sure tomorrow night, 7:30 in Indianapolis, game 3. You'd like to see the Pacers win that, of course. We've got to take a quick break. 333-2665 is the phone number. Dave and Glass with you in the zone. All right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Quick programming note. Reds had a afternoon game today, but we will have them Thursday, Friday, Saturday, 7 o'clock, all three nights as the Cubs come to town.
First place Cubbies come to town. Reds are in second place after their win today. Walk it off, catcher Tucker Barnhart, the game-winning hit in the bottom of the ninth. Third walk-off win for the Reds already. 8 wins this year, 3 of them have been walk-offs, and I believe they've all been at home as well. They only had 5 walk-off wins last year, so first place Cubbies coming to town for a big weekend four-game series. We'll have the first 3 for you right here on WGCL.
Looking forward, next week is the NFL draft. Colts with a very quiet offseason, kind of more about people being released or let sign elsewhere. Kobe Fleener signs with the Saints. Andre Johnson released, not really much of a surprise there.
Still a free agent, if you're wondering.
Yeah, a couple of those veterans that they signed last year still on the team, Frank Gore, Trent Cole. But not a lot of quote-unquote solutions. They did bring in Patrick Robinson, a very good cornerback.
Yes.
Now, all of a sudden, your cornerback position, even after letting Greg Toler go, might be your deepest position, which, by the way...
Might have had an upgrade there, by the way.
The thing that got missed a lot by Denver's Super Bowl run in the postseason was, yes, their pass rushers made all the noise because of all the sacks. But all of those corners playing the underneath coverage and making it hard for a guy like Tom Brady to throw that quick pass that he loves to throw to Julian Edelman and his tight ends. Those aren't available because guys are draped all over them. So you want a lot of corners right now. There's no question.
Sure, you do. And it looks like Vontae Davis is one of the best 5 in the business. So that's a great problem to have. Dwight Lowry is gone as well. So that's one less in your secondary. So that means who's the safety they got last year, the rookie they really, really liked?
Clayton Gathers.
Yeah, they're going to move him in. And he's had a year.
He played a lot in nickel positions.
He's had a year to get under – get it under his belt and figure out how it works. But just like everything else, the NFL is a league of attrition. The team with the least amount of injuries will win. And when your quarterback misses 9 games last season because he almost dies, well, that's an issue. And the Colts, Dave, were half game away from making the playoffs because they did figure it out and put it together. That's a good sign of character. But you had guys, Henry Anderson did his knee. Hopefully he recovers and gets back in time for that. Dave Perry had a nice rookie year.
Yep.
You had some very bright spots, but not a lot of continuity in all of that. But there's no doubt, if the Colts get 31 a game, they're going to be okay on the defensive side of the ball because it's a different style. But what they need to do is find a way to get that offense clicking, get a brand new coordinator. Chudzinski took over, seven games in last year. So he's in. Brian Schottenheimer's a new quarterback's coach. He's been in the league for 100 years. Yep. Football's in his blood.
Some changes.
So that is good. Fleener's no longer going to be there, so the drop pass chart you can put away for a little bit.
Well, they relied on Kobe, though, a lot, and he's developed into a very nice pass-catching guy. But they bring back Dwayne Allen. Again, all the promise in the world. Not a lot of money spent on Dwayne Allen either.
That's the nice
thing. Jack Doyle caught balls for him. So, I mean,
you need a second tight end.
He's just fine. You save a little bit of money on not going after Fleener. Your wide receivers are nice.
Your wide receivers are set for 5 years.
Yeah, exactly.
You've got a nice core there.
You've obviously got the quarterback. Frank Gore, you'd like to have somebody who steps up behind him and gives him a blow here and there and can pass block also. The offensive line, I mean, it's a disaster still. And that's a little strong. But, I mean, you need at least two guys in there that impress you.
Where do the Colts pick? They miss the playoffs by a game. And that's the other issue.
I think they're 18 or somewhere in that. It's not very good.
And in that draft, I've just briefly read on it. Obviously, I'm going to take care of more of this on the weekend. It drops off quickly.
Yeah.
You get a lot of the same. I think it was either Schefter, Kuiper, one of those guys quoted some GM saying, there ain't a whole lot of difference between picks 20 to 120.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a lot of guys in the same mishmash. Mm-hmm. Not great, not terrible, serviceable, but not maybe difference changers.
There's decent
makers.
Depth, but there's not that guy that steps in right away and wows you.
Exactly.
And here's your problem for the Colts in particular. There really aren't a lot of draft picks that they've made under Ryan Grigson that are still left on this team.
But
they're just
skill
not.
Skill players, yeah.
Skill players, yes. I mean, you go back to his first draft, you still have three or four of them. You got Luck, you got Allen, you got Hilton. I mean, you still have those
guys. And those are great players, let's be fair.
Yeah, but you've let Breon Warner go. You didn't have a first-round draft pick in 2014. You did bring in Jack Buhort. You like him a lot.
Yep.
Dante Moncrief has turned into a nice guy. But
Dorsett's going to be a good player with that speed.
You've got several of your top picks in this last draft. You need DeJuan Smith to step up, no question.
What was Gethers? What round was he?
He was in the fourth round. I mean, that's a great pick in the fourth round. The third and the fifth round are your two defensive tackles out of Stanford.
Both
I really like those
minutes,
guys long term. So that's a nice comeback draft, but the couple before that hurt you a bit.
So the million-dollar question that we'll get to next week is, do you draft need or do you draft talent?
Strength. Because what do you do? He said, I mean, Ryan Grigson says that you take the best player, and I think that's a Bill Polian situation too. A lot of guys go by that. You got to trust it. If they take a wide receiver, though, people are going to lose their mind around here.
And I don't blame them.
And Luck might lose another kidney.
We got to take off, folks. We'll be back Monday, so tune in then. Remember, Reds all weekend, not tonight, but Thursday, Friday, Saturday, 7 o'clock all weekend against the first-place Cubbies. Reds trying to make up some ground, and we will be back with you Monday. You've been in the zone.